Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you whisper.
Yes, indeed. Here we go again. Let's get started. Tonight we have a special guest. Please welcome to the show, Anya Sullivan.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
When you hear of someone refer to someone, "Oh, she's just a witch," what do you think of? Well, most people have preconceived notions that witches are bad, spooky, scary, and someone not necessarily people should be dealing with. However, in the case of my guest this evening, Anya Sullivan, all of this could not be further from the truth. Anya Sullivan founded Saren Witchery in February of 2018. An eclectic witch of all trades, she is a practicing witch, healer, and psychic medium who provides various magical services such as tarot and crystal ball readings to her clients. Anya is also a crystal Reiki master, sound therapist, and gem elixir potions master, learning her trade from the elders in her community. Anya worked on a nonprofit board for a pagan organization, serving for 13 years, and was initiated as a high priestess in June of 2016. She is currently a retired sign language interpreter with 32 years of experience under her belt. She also offers services for the deaf, hard of hearing, and hearing communities. Anya has also taught a class on how to protect your energy from those around you. We had a very interesting discussion tonight about just about everything. So please sit back and welcome to the show, my guest, Anya Sullivan. Well, thank you, Anya, for being on the show today. We're really glad to have you here.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, excited to have you as usual. I'd like to start out as usually what I, just to give you an idea of how I start out with my guests, because people do like to hear about the foundation of them and how they evolved to where they are now. And so I think because you're probably one of my more interesting guests, and I mean that wholeheartedly, I would like to delve into your world today, maybe a little bit further than most people are aware of and what I usually do. So what I'd like to do then is I'd like to start out, I want you to go back as far as you possibly can remember. And I want you to tell me what experience you either had or came to have where it kind of started the ball rolling for you. Where was that for you?
I was very young. I was around two.
Two?
Yeah. I could see things other people couldn't. I could describe people that had passed on. And my mother took note of it. And I got very, very lucky. My mother felt that this was a gift from God and that it needed to be nurtured. So instead of being told, no, this isn't real. No, you can't do that. No, ghosts don't exist. It was, what are you hearing? What are you seeing? And it was nurtured and loved. When I was a young girl, I remember having a family friend who had a young girl who died in the house. Mm-hmm. And her and I would play. And the people were like, what is going on? And they kind of made fun of me about it. But that's where I started getting thick skin about that. And my mom would say, they don't understand because they can't see or hear like you can. And so I kind of learned really quick that there were things I could see and hear that other people just couldn't. And I had to learn when to talk about it and when not to talk about it. I've seen dead people all my life. I tell people often, they're like, oh, so you watch The Walking Dead? I'm like, no, I live The Walking Dead. I don't need to watch The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. People come to me in their death states all the time, which is just like seeing a zombie. Yeah. So for me, watching The Walking Dead is not a fun, relaxing show to watch. It's more like, oh, look, my day. I've been doing that all my life. I got into witchcraft when I was in my late 20s, early 30s, moved up here to Oregon and got involved in the Episcopal Church. And that was when they made the vote that same-sex marriages would not be recognized. Mm-hmm. I have a real problem with that. Love is love. I finally said, you know, Catholicism doesn't fit me. Episcopalian doesn't fit me. What can I find? I need to find a spiritual practice for me. And I was introduced to Scott Cunningham's books, The Solitary Practitioner Guide to Wicca. Mm-hmm. I read the first four chapters and I went, this is it. Mm-hmm. This is what I was looking for. And so from then on out, I just learned vocabulary words that actually attached to all the stuff I had been doing in all of my life before that. It wasn't until I learned witchcraft that I realized that one of the reasons as an ASL interpreter out on the field, one of the reasons I could voice so well for a deaf person was because I could connect with their energy mm-hmm. and understand the communication flow. Mm-hmm. And so when a lot of people were like, how can you voice so skilledly? At first, before I learned witchcraft and the vocabulary, I was like, I don't know, I just do. Mm-hmm. And then after I started learning it, I was like, oh, I'm tapping into the energy flow. Okay, now I get that. Okay. And so it just kind of like grew in and of itself. Because I'm fluent in ASL, I also get a lot of deaf clients that come to me because they don't have to use an interpreter. They don't have to worry about communication because it's just direct between the two of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so interesting. Wow. Let's step back. I'm going to step back a little bit because you brought up a couple things here that's very unique compared mm-hmm. to many of the guests that I have. And I want to go and step back to The Walking Dead for a moment here. So, you know, it's we all, many of us who have different gifts that vary, often wonder how on earth did I come to have this? And I guess the mm-hmm. first question people will want to know is, have you learned throughout time where some of your gifts may have come from? Because it's not something that people wake up with and go, yeah, I know exactly where I got this from and da 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 da. They usually question it most of their life. Did you have this in your family?
My mother is psychic. My father is psychic. I don't know if they claim knowledge that they are, but I've seen things happen that, oh, that's a psychic. You know, it's a psychic intake type of thing, because as one psychic, if you watch another psychic do it, you can see it or feel it in a way. My mother has always had the ability. I didn't know my father had the ability until my teenage years, because he was able to catch me right before I did something I wasn't supposed to. Mm-hmm. And so I think it is generational for us. My sister is also a channeler and a healer as well. So it runs in our family. Okay. So, but as far as developing it, mm-hmm. it was encouraged to develop, but we weren't really like taught how. It wasn't until we were adults and we started taking classes mm-hmm. about psychic energy and channel. My sister took channeling classes, for example. I took classes on healing and energy healing and stuff like that. Witchcraft classes, which helped me to understand energy flow and so on and so forth. So I developed it as I got older.
Yeah, but when you were like 2 years old, 2, 3, 4, 5, that age range, and you could actually see these apparitions coming to you, what did they, I mean, a person's judgment and their brain abilities don't always get put into full gear here until you're probably around, oh, I used to teach this about maybe age 28 to 35. In other words, you're still developing. That's what I'm trying to tell
everybody. Right.
So as you're developing right. everything, so as a very young child at the age of 2, 3, 4, 5, because I had, mm-hmm. I started recognizing my abilities at about age 4 to 5, because I used to see, I used to have premonitions in my dreams and they would show mm-hmm. up on TV the next day. But the thing is mm-hmm. that as a young kid, I don't know when you see somebody else that's an apparition, if you're thinking, oh, this is my playmate or someone has come to visit me today because they look relatively human to you. Do you recall mm-hmm. did the form look human to you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The little girl that I played with, she looked like a kid my own age. Mm-hmm. But I was the only one who could see her. Mm-hmm. I was the only one that could hear her talking to me. Mm-hmm. And my mom was very supportive, whereas the other people in the house were like, sure. Yeah. And my mom's like, and that's when my mom was very supportive and said, you know, you are going to have people who are going to make fun of you, but it's because they can't do what you can do.
Yeah.
Was it scary? Sometimes, yes. My mother, being a Catholic of Catholic faith, she prayed protection around me almost constantly. And I think because of that, I really didn't get anything that scared me until I was much older. Probably, I think the first one that scared me, I think I was about 16 and a half, 17.
Mm-hmm.
And that one scared me.
What happened?
It was a big shadow man. And he was trying to wrestle my energy away from me.
Mm-hmm.
It happened in a dream, or in a dream state, at least for me.
Yeah.
And it was a big wrestle, but my mother is a very big, believer in, Archangel Michael.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was always protected by Archangel Michael. And in the nightmare, towards the very end, I yelled out for help and the Archangel Michael came. And when he showed up, the guy just like, it was gone and the light was there and I felt warm and I was able to go back to sleep. But that was the first time that anything really nasty had happened. But again, I was, you know, 16, 17 ish when that happened.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very lucky that my mother's prayers and protection had kept it at bay until then.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that has always fascinated me was, what it's like for somebody with gifts to actually go through their elementary, their high school years and stuff like that. Because, you know, we get real busy and our focus is always on schoolwork and stuff like that. But then there's always a downtime too. And mm-hmm. I know that for myself, I know that I could see things happening as a conclusion to something well before anyone else. And I thought to myself, and I used to remember me thinking this, isn't that odd how I can see things? I used to tell people too, yeah, I can usually see things or predict things that are happening. And I don't know how anyone else can miss the signals here. I said, this is kind of crazy. So how was life for you in those younger years, in whether it be elementary school or whether did you ever have any apparition join you while you were in school?
Oh yeah. I mean, they joined me, but by the time I was in school, when it got serious and like one of my ghost friends would go with me to school,
mm-hmm.
I knew not to tell anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I knew, you know, the conversation had to be up in my head and not out my mouth.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there were times when, you know, they would, but I also went to Catholic school. So even at Catholic schools, there's other entities walking around, you know, because ancestors of the children, dead family members, so on and so forth. You know, there is always something. And then you had the Catholic Church attached to it. So, of course, funerals and births and, you know, there's always energy expounding through there. I was always labeled as the weird kid. So,
yeah,
you know, I was bullied a lot in school, but a lot of that was because I was the weird kid, because I would look at him and go, I wouldn't do that if I was you. Because, again, I knew something bad was going to happen because I could feel it physically in my body.
Yeah.
And so I learned how to trust those instincts and that intuition. And then when I started learning witchcraft, I realized that that whole time I had been using my intuition and my psychic abilities. I just didn't know that that's what they were.
Yeah. Well, I was known as the depressed kid. So, you know, I felt, I don't know, a lot of, even some of the classmates that I heard over the years that were always in the popular groups or whatever, they would always sit there and make a comment to somebody, and then it would kind of come down the line that they felt like they were all alone, or they were the odd person out, or they were this or they were that. And I always looked at them differently, and I thought, that's not how it looked from my perspective. From my perspective, you know, I understand what you went through. I wasn't necessarily bullied, but I was ignored. And so the thing is that, and I was the smart kid that was always into her homework, not tremendously smart because I struggled. But the thing is I could have used an apparition or two to come and help me with some of the answers once in a while. But have you ever, when you were in school, though, have you ever run into a situation where you thought something, someone was real, but it turned out to be an apparition, and you were maybe having a discussion with them or something, and somebody caught you at that?
Yeah. Normally they'd look at me and go, who are you talking to? And I had already been programmed to say, I'm just talking to myself.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if I'm talking to myself, I'm not crazy.
Right.
If I'm talking to the dead person, nobody else can see.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way I was treated in elementary, middle school, and high school. Yeah. Whereas in high school, I had more friends who just believed me.
Yeah.
And that's where playing with Ouija boards came from, because I would play with them with my girlfriends, you know, because it was the thing to do, you know, in the mid 80s, because we didn't have the internet.
You know? And you bring up, that's a great way segue into our next discussion here. So, I agree with you. So I graduated in 1980. It was 1977, 78, something around that line, where we had a couple teachers in my school who were very well liked, who lived in a haunted house, who decided to print in the school newspaper their experiences of living in a haunted house and connecting to the apparition, za or one, by means of a Ouija board. Back in my day, even hearing about, you know, to me, it was like, what's a Ouija board? So you know, it's like, oh, it's something you can communicate with, you know, whatever and stuff. So anyway, I found that was an opening for me to be interested in the topic, because then I didn't feel so unusual about, because if the popular teachers are talking about this and they're putting it in the paper, then it must be okay. So I want to delve into your world, because I had heard a couple things that had happened with this one gal who had gotten a Ouija board and all this sort of thing and was with them and trying to help them figure out this kid. So what was your first introduction to the Ouija board like?
The first introduction that I had to the Ouija board was very non-problematic. Mm-hmm. I had told my mom that my girlfriend was going to get one and that I was going to go spend the night and play with it. And my mother made it very clear. You say the Our Father before you start. You say the Hail Mary when you're done. You be respectful. You open it. You close it. You know, she was very, she didn't get freaked out or anything, because she understood it was a divination tool. Mm-hmm. No different than tarot. No different than the crystal ball or the pendulum. And so when I did it with my girlfriend, we did do that and we played with it a few times. However, she decided one night that she was bored, and so she pulled it out and played with it by herself.
Oh, geez.
Well, when I went to her house the next time we were going to play with it, I forgot to say my Our Father or the prayer. And I grabbed the Ouija board and I felt something slide into my body.
Oh.
And I knew something was wrong. I found out about, I think it was a month later, I found out that her grandma found it or something happened with it and it freaked her out. So she threw it away.
Mm-hmm.
Which, that's a very common story that you hear, you know. It just freaked me out. It moved. Well, it moved. Did you close the session? Well, no. How do you do that? Why are we, this is not a toy.
Yeah.
This should not be marketed as a toy. It should not be sold as a toy. It is a divination tool. And if you don't know what you're doing, you can put yourself and your family in danger.
Yeah.
You know, so I went, luckily, Catholic school. we had a really cool priest at our school, Notre Dame. I went to all ages, kindergarten through high school.
Mm-hmm.
And we transferred over to Notre Dame. And we had a really cool priest who knew that we kids would play with stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I felt, I was having thoughts about hurting people, and I am not that kind of a person.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew something was wrong, but I didn't want to freak my mom out because I forgot to say my prayer. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to get in trouble for messing, you know, not following the rules. So I went to the priest and I said, look, this is what happened. And the priest goes, okay, we're going to do like a mini exorcism because you seem to have it under control. So let's do it now.
Mm-hmm.
So he removed the entity. I did 45 minutes on and off, you know, and I was able to recover from it. I felt like I had the flu after for a couple of days. But after that experience, I'm super duper uber careful when it comes to those Ouija boards. Mm-hmm. Because you can't guarantee what has happened when it is out of your sight, especially if you share it with another person.
Right. Right.
And so that was the only real negative one. I have a lot of people. I have a store here in Portland that calls me on a regular basis and asks me to come cleanse Ouija boards that have been brought into their store for resale. So I go in and I cleanse them. I make sure that they're good. And there's one where I was like, nope, it's going home with me.
Mm-hmm.
So there are times when, like, especially people who buy them and like, we're going to go play in a graveyard. Lord and lady, please don't do that. Mm-hmm. If you don't know what you're doing, please, for the love of all that's holy, don't take a Ouija board into the graveyards or a cemetery or anywhere where there are a large amount of dead people, because it becomes a revolving door. And even though you shut the session, you can't guarantee that it didn't make a portal, especially in a place of such an enormous amount of dead.
Yeah.
And so I'm called in to shut those portals to, this is now, you know, you can now sell this, but they always have a disclaimer in it. I also found that it doesn't come with a whole lot of instruction.
Yeah.
You know, and so we found one where it says you set a circle, you do protection, you do this, you do that. And the owner of that store made copies of it and put it in every single box.
Yeah.
So to me, Ouija boards are not something that are scary or demon oriented. That's Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Abrahamic religions who that say that that's an evil thing. It's no different than using tarot cards, crystal ball. They're divination tools and you need to know how to use them.
Mm-hmm. There are some mischievous energies flitting around in some of these cemeteries and graveyards and all that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes, there are a lot more things going to be lurking around, like a cemetery or a graveyard. I've gone to a mental institution,
mm-hmm.
and it's been worse than a graveyard. As an interpreter, I was an ASL interpreter in my past career, and I worked in a mental institution here in Salem, and the dead are everywhere, because this place has been open for almost 100 years.
Yeah.
And so that just the history of it, and when you walk through, then there's also a sacred area where people who were never claimed by family.
Okay.
Their crematorium is there as well. And they honor those people by having their names up, but there's lost souls walking all around. So during my break, I would go hang out and I would ask anybody if they wanted to be crossed over. And so I would cross them over into the light and help them. And there's some that really didn't want to go. There were some that were locked in death loops. There were some that were like, no, my mom and dad are coming to get me. Mm-hmm. And so, well, yeah, but honey, that was in 1897. And at the time it was like, it's 1998 or 1999. Your mom and dad are in the light. That's why the light keeps shining for you, you know? So it really doesn't mean, it really isn't just graveyards and cemeteries. It could be anywhere.
Yeah. Well,
hospitals.
Hospitals, especially, and nursing homes.
Hospitals, nursing homes, any rehab kind of facility, veterans, the VA. Oh my God, the VA has a lot of, you know, hauntings. And you know, as it should be, these people had unfinished business and they needed to take care of it. There were many times as an interpreter, I would be accidentally, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, yeah, sent to the morgue by accident. And it was because there was a dead person who really needed to get a message to their wife, but they couldn't, you know, the person who's taking care of them couldn't hear them, couldn't see them. And so I walked into a morgue at once and I'm like, there's no way this is the audiology department.
Oh my God. Not.
And this old man, this older gentleman comes up to me and he goes, you really need to call my wife. The key is in the drawer under the secret panel. And I looked at him and I'm like, dude, nobody knows me here. I can't just walk up to somebody and say, oh, by the way. And he followed me around and nagged me to the point where finally I walked up to the person who was working in the morgue. And I said, hi there. I'm really sorry to bother you. I explained I am a psychic medium and this gentleman right here. And of course I'm gesturing to air, you know, he looks like this. And of course there, I can't see a body cause they're all in their little refrigerator compartments, you know? And I described him and her eyebrows kept going up higher and higher as I described him. So I knew I was on the right track. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, would you please, please call his wife? The important key she's looking for is in this drawer on this side. Open up the drawer, but there's a false bottom. She needs to reach in the back and push down so that it pops up. The woman, of course, looked at me like I was out of my freaking mind and I should have been medicated. And I'm like, look, I'm really sorry, but would you please call his wife because he is not going to leave me alone until you call her. Mm-hmm. And so she was like, okay, mm-hmm, you know,
yeah,
called. And the wife goes, oh my God, I'm in his office looking for that key right now. Mm-hmm. And she almost dropped the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And then she, you know, finished the conversation. And when she looked at me and hung up and she goes, supposed to be. And I looked at her and laughed and I went, audiology? And she goes, that's on the fourth floor. How did you get sent to the basement? I'm like, reception told me audiology was in the morgue. She's like, okay, there is a reason for you to be here. Thank you so much. You need to leave now because you're making me really uncomfortable. And I was like, okay, thank you for your time. Bye. And I looked at the old man and I'm like, and he goes, thank you, and walked right into the light. So I knew that that was some really important, and probably his will, his estate planning, all of that stuff was probably where that, you know, inside where that key held. Mm-hmm. And so those are the kind of stories that I have that, you know, they're wonderful and helpful. I've had some nasty ones where I've had to remove things from homes that were family members that were abusive. Mm-hmm. Those are not fun.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, I have all different experiences from, I get called by ghost hunters often to come, because I am a witch, to come and bless and protect them before they go on their walk. Up here in Oregon, I have yet to be invited on a ghost hunt.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have people who will call me from California with, can you please distance do this? Yeah, sure. I'll help you out. So it just really depends on, you know, what's going on. I could do a lot of house cleansings too. Mm-hmm. You know, and a few of them are, hey, we bought a Ouija board for our daughter for her birthday. And now things are apparating. Things are being thrown. Can you come and help out? Yes, I can. Have the Ouija board ready for me because I'm going to need to look at it. And I would have to say that 9 out of 10 times that Ouija board ends up because the parents want to, or because the kid wants to burn them, destroy them. They'll give them to me. I'll rehome them or remediate them. I do have a person in Northern California, if I was ever to find one, that was extraordinarily haunted. Mm-hmm. And there are stories of stuff that, like, you can't burn it. It just will not burn. Mm-hmm. And if that is the case, I would send the haunted board to the person that I know in Northern California, and they would put it in their haunted museum.
Wow. You know, I know there's a couple that has a, I met them at a conference about a year, maybe a year and a half ago, and they have a whole exhibit of Ouija boards from whatever areas. But I do remember two situations that occurred when I was at this conference. And one of them happened when, I don't know if I was looking across the room at this one or whatever, but the first one was, I think someone had gone up to the gentleman and was asking about, are these Ouija boards cleared? You know, something like that. And the guy was like, yep, they're all cleared. There's not one here that is going to do anything because they're just a plain simple Ouija board. And the moment he said that, half of his it flung off, it jumped. So you know how there's a ridge on mm-hmm. when people set things down, kind of like when they're displaying things,
right
jumped up and fell over. And it landed on top of something that made it collapse. And it was like, you would think that the whole place was going to fall down, because that's exactly what happened when he was, there's not one Ouija board here, you know. And then it did, bump, bump, and then boom, crash. And it was just this big saga. And it was so loud, because I remember, I think I was talking to someone I was asking to be on the show at the time, way across the room. And I just remember there was, like, you could hear a pin drop and everyone's looking right over the corner. The second time something happened, and he said that too, the man's booth, like kind of next door to them or whatever, but, you know, not too close, but yet all of a sudden his stuff collapsed and fell onto the ground. It was kind of an interesting thing, because I don't think people realize the power that some of these things have. And they are, and they can be very communicative depending on who's speaking through them. Which brings me to a question to you about when you're talking about this gentleman nudging you and bugging you and all that about this key. So, you know, people always want to know when people pass away, if some do linger around, how long do they linger around for? Because I've heard many different theories now that some from the 1800s are not showing anymore, or this or that or whatever, and for whatever reason, or people go over to a haunted castle over in Europe and they just won't have any experience at all. Well, when you have a million people going into a place and wanting an experience, you know, these things do get a little tired of it. But, you know, the thing is that, what's your thoughts about when someone passes away, whether they can come back to visit, or are they fine and then they go? I don't know. What are your thoughts?
It really depends. It's individualistic, very individualistic. It depends on the person, how they passed, were they prepared, were they not? I mean, it's a laundry list. What I have found is if they have unfinished business, they stick around to try and take care of that unfinished business. We all know about that.
Yeah.
But there are people who do cross over and then come back as guardians or spirit guides or angels. My mother has always said that when she does cross over, that she will be our family's guardian angel. And she looks forward to having her wings and, you know, those kind of things. So I've seen people cross and then come back. I've seen people refuse to cross because they're afraid of what's waiting for them on the other end. Maybe they did a few things in this lifetime that not the best decisions, and they're afraid of a punishment that is waiting on the other end for them, depending on which faith they choose to follow in their lifetime. There are some that just don't understand that they're gone.
Yeah.
And they don't, there is, it's like a confusion. They're in a state of confusion because they, to them, they're still here, but why can't anybody hear them? Why can't anybody see them? Why are people walking through me? Why do I feel weird? Why am I not hungry? Why am I not thirsty? And so for me, there's like levels almost of different spirits, entities, dead person. Now, these are all just humans who have passed away. We're not talking about shadow figures. We're not talking about elementals. We're not talking about, you know, dryads or other spirits, fairies that we do have around us in different dimensions that we're totally unaware of unless we have been exposed to them, see them through our psychic third eye or through our, you know, our optical vision, using the third eye to translate that information or energy. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm just, you know, I'm thinking of a couple situations here. I mean, I know that when my dad passed away, I was 600 miles away teaching in a classroom at the time, and I knew something was going on because the screen behind me started to slowly, which it never had ever done before, slowly rise. Now, keep in mind, I was on a very haunted campus. But the thing is that, and my classroom was and became very haunted because all of a sudden I was like a gathering point for some reason. And my students were starting to get a little freaked out. Some of them were being in there and they would come up to me and say, I don't want to sound crazy to you, but something just whispered in my ear and, you know, stuff like that. But when the screen went up really, really slowly, they were pointing at the screen. And I was sitting there doing my usual teaching thing. And I turned around and I saw that. And the first thing that went through my head was, my dad just died. I don't know. I was just, to me, it was kind of like, how else would they have gotten my attention? There was many things they've done in the classroom to get my attention, whoever they were. But my dad, I believe, has tried to call me on the phone. And, you know, but with all the scammers and stuff and all this, you know, this crap going on these days with people calling you, no one likes to pick up their phone anymore. They wait until someone leaves a message or they know who's calling them. Right. And, I saw 0000000000. And I looked down and I said, I think I know it's you, Dad, calling me, I think, but I can't pick up this phone. So then I became engulfed in his, we're a farmer. So a barn smell, a very specific smell, not just a barn smell, very specific smell. And I knew he was standing near me, by me or whatever. But by the time I went to get my equipment or anything to try to talk with him, he was gone. And then, of course, about a month ago, just very recent, someone that we in the family knew had apparently passed away, like say on a Sunday afternoon or evening. But the next day it was kind of weird because I kept asking for a sign this whole time. And I felt somebody put their hand on my shoulder and press it down while I was sleeping. And I kind of woke up as if I thought it was, you know, my husband or somebody. And there was nobody there. And I said, was that you? So, you know, the thing is people want to believe that their loved ones are around them and that they come back to see them or they're bringing them messages or whatever.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm sure you've been through this many, many times with people about their loved ones. What kind of things can you share regarding your experiences with that?
I've had people that have come to me because they need to know that their family is okay. I have found that with the pandemic, there is a little bit of an uptick of the spiritualist movement yet again, like we had at the end of the Civil War, or after World War I and World War II and Korea and Vietnam. There is always a spiritualist movement when there is a large swath of people who pass on. And it's because we who are living need to be reassured that they're okay, whether they're at peace, whether that they've crossed over. Are they in heaven? Please tell me they're in heaven. I get that a lot.
Yeah.
And to me as a witch, heaven and the Summerlands are the same, but we witches don't believe in hell. So it's a little bit, are they in hell? Not really. But are they in a dark place because they did some really nasty things in this lifetime? Yes. Are they in hell? Depends on your religious stance. I say that they're in the underworld being rebirthed because they need to wallow in those lessons so that when they are reincarnated and come back on this plane, they're not bringing the same issues with them, whether it be, you know, for example, murderers, rapists, you know, all of those horrible things that people can do to one another. Those people aren't going to necessarily end up in heaven or the Summerland. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, and a lot of it is, again, all very individualistic, mm-hmm. because everybody's belief system is different. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I would like you to explain, this is a good transitional point here about, I don't often have very many, very few actually, someone who would term themselves to be a witch, okay? And okay. I just remember, and I'll never forget this, I was at Zach Bagan's museum a few years ago, where of course I had a horrendous experience inside of it, and shut the place down. But just before we went in, it was my sister and I, there was a woman who was kind of like the tour guide, I guess you could say, or the greeter before you go mm-hmm. into this experience, right?
Yeah.
And she introduced herself as being, let's see, how would I say this? I turned to my sister and I said, what you're looking at right now is someone who is a witch. And I can't remember how it came out of my mouth, but she started to apologize to the woman and say, please excuse my sister. She didn't mean that. That's very disrespectful. But the woman was a witch, okay? Mm-hmm. But she didn't understand that that's not how I meant it to be. People
right.
have their own ideas about what a witch is. And I said, by the way, that's the most flattering thing I probably said to her today. And you're sitting here apologizing because you're not educated enough or you know, on the subject to understand the difference of what I just said. So I want you to tell people a little bit about how we should maybe view witches.
Let's start by disregarding every witch movie you've ever seen out of Hollywood. Let's start with that.
Mm-hmm.
Witchcraft is not like hocus pocus.
Mm-hmm.
We do not eat babies. Yeah. Now, there are dark witches that will feed off of things. I'm not saying that we're all white, light, bright, okay? There are different kinds of witches. One of the popular reasons that witchcraft has grown, and the last article I read through Mother Jones was about a year ago, and they said that the practice of witchcraft has quintupled in the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. The reason why is it's personal accountability.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to go to a priest to get to my god or goddess. They're always with me, and I can reach them myself. I am my own priestess. I'm responsible for that. Mm-hmm. Not them, not that person, not a guy with a big hat, mm-hmm. you know, but me.
Yeah.
And a lot of that, and witchcraft is also thought of as nasty and horrible and terrible, when in all actuality, we live in cooperation and in harmony with nature.
Mm-hmm.
We're the ones recycling, repurposing, reducing, reusing, because we believe that the earth is our mother. And if we don't care for her, who will?
Yeah.
So we're stewards. Mm-hmm. We believe in using energy magic. Now, when I say energy and magic, I'm talking about using quantum physics and quantum mechanics. It does not happen like on Harry Potter where you know, mm-hmm. a wand and something floats. Now, can that happen? Sure, it can. Does it happen every time? No. The closest thing on TV that I could say kind of is a good example. I would say is maybe closer to the first, like the first realization of the show Charmed. Mm-hmm. It doesn't always happen right. It doesn't always go the way you want it. You misspoke something in the middle of it and you're not quite getting what you asked for. Magic is the ability to understand energy and move energy towards a goal. That's what you Christians say praying. Mm-hmm. We say spells.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is not necessarily a bad thing. We have had to reclaim the word witch. Mm-hmm. Because unfortunately, the Abrahamic practices and theological practices have villainized. Mm-hmm. And of course, Hollywood and plays and, you know, all that other stuff has actually exacerbated it and made it worse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
yeah,
being a witch for me is important. It's who I am as my identity. So when someone says, oh, yeah, she's a witch.
Mm.
You can tell by the inflection in their voice what they mean.
Mm-hmm.
And usually for me, I usually smile and go, that's right, I am. How can I help you?
Mm-hmm.
And that usually stops them cold.
Mm-hmm.
Because instead of allowing them to use it as a slur, I use it as a word of empowerment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, when we're brought up, grown up, whatever you want to, and in our elementary and our high schools and stuff like that, you don't get that aspect at all. I mean, back in your day, back in mine, it was all about going to church, maybe going to church and being very much into your religion, practices and teachings rather than anything else. Anything outside of what you knew from your religion was almost taboo or something scary or spooky, mm-hmm. or anything that people felt people were, you know, delving into that they shouldn't be delving into. I finally got used to the idea of a witch when I had one or two on my show and came to learn about this a little bit differently than a simple religious teaching. However, one right. of the things I do know, and you just brought this up and it's a very interesting point, is that maybe it's just me, or maybe other people are realizing this, or maybe are recognizing this, but it seems like there's been a different attitude as of late regarding going, not necessarily going away from the church, but trying to understand what the church's purpose is versus a purpose of any other type of spirituality. Have you recognized that at all where you are from?
Oh, yeah. Here in Oregon specifically, I believe. Now, I haven't seen the studies in years, but when I did do studies and learned about it, we're one of the lowest attendees to church states. Hmm. We don't have a lot of, I mean, we have our little swaths, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But most of them are not regular churchgoers. We kind of live our lives as we do. We have a large amount of people who are esoteric, who, you know, decide, you know, different pantheons. They're pagans, not necessarily a witch. They do magic, but they follow, you know, whatever pantheon they're working on. I work a lot with the Egyptian pantheon. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people who work with the Norse pantheon. It just, everything is individualistic. The reason there's been such a boom, honestly, I have to thank the Harry Potter series.
Okay.
It took it from a place of, oh no, to, whoa, that's kind of cool. Whoa, that's kind of cool. Wait. There's been teachings about this for hundreds of years. What? Mm-hmm. And that kind of spurred it. And there are a lot of my elders in the community that have been working to destigmatize what we do, how we do it, and the words that are used that have been villainized by either Abrahamic theology or through Hollywood in and of itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've noticed that. And I'm one of the other things I've also noticed lately too, especially when it comes to the Hollywood movies and TV shows and stuff. There seems to be an awful lot focusing lately on the paranormal, ghosts, you know, is a show that's literally apparently have taken off because they still are running season, you know, after season. And it's kind of the only thing that I don't like about especially the friends of mine who do not, who are very skeptical anyway, anything paranormal or extraterrestrial or even witch, you know, craft or anything like that is like way off limits. I mean, it's kind of like very, very conservative practices, right?
Right. And that's very, very steeped and rooted in that Abrahamic tradition.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really interesting. One of the things that does come to my mind, because, you know, I've noticed there's been so much more programming on television in the last few years regarding anything extraterrestrial, anything paranormal, even quirky, no offense to the creator, because obviously it's taken off some of these shows that introduce. The only thing that I don't like about some of this stuff is that what people don't realize is that it can take an awfully long time to gather evidence when you are a paranormal investigator, or let's say the comedy show called Ghosts. I mean, I watch it. So once in a while I watch it just to kind of get a chuckle, but those friends of mine who don't necessarily believe in this stuff actually believe some of the quirky things that happen in these shows, which I say, that's not how it works at all. And so then I find myself having to defend, not defend, but argue very briefly with them about how things aren't as they appear. And that's the same thing with witchcraft too, how they appear. But, you know, what are your thoughts about the paranormal now getting some, and extraterrestrial, getting so much attention now on social media?
I think a lot of it has to do with technology and the fact that technology has caught up to what we psychics have been able to see, perceive for eons. In the Mayan 2012 predictions, there was a lot of talk about the fact that our technology would catch up with us and allow us to understand that we live parallel to many dimensions around us as we are living. So now it's taking off because everybody has the Alexa thing or the Google thing or the this thing or the that thing that hooks up all the cameras in their house. So now we have proof, because your camera, everybody's sleeping, but your camera's picking up motion. What motion? It's infrared picking up that there is something moving through that field. We now have the technology that has caught up with us. So that's why now all of a sudden, look at all this stuff. Now, there have been some stuff that I have seen on social media where I know that was staged. That was not real at all. And then there's other ones where I look at it and go, oh, no. You know, so it really is. And with today's technology, cameras are everywhere. So we're now catching things that we were never had the privy to be exposed to, that we now are exposed to all the time, because there's cameras everywhere, phones everywhere. Technology allows us to see things that we can't see with the human optical nerve.
Well, one of the things that I don't know if you remember this or if it happened to you, but it was about a couple months ago. I keep telling, because I was having so many issues interviewing my guests, and people were saying, well, I think we're going through a magnetic shift or something out there, because the computers are acting weird. People's cell phones are calling people that they never called to begin with, and all that. I had a friend actually who reached out to me who said, you called, you know, nice to hear from you. I said, I never, and not only that, I didn't call her phone. I called her husband's phone. And that's even more weird, because I don't think I even have him in my phone anymore, as a way of getting a hold of her and stuff. And so my brother's phone either called somebody or somebody called his phone and left a message. There's people even at the conference. One of the organizers, somebody wrote something on her phone while she was taking a shower. And it's just like, and it wasn't her husband. And so that was really baffling. Did you go through this a few months ago?
Yes. There's also other things as a witch I consider when I look at those kind of things. So the first thing is where's Mercury?
Yes.
If Mercury is in retrograde, you're going to have problems with technology. You're going to have problems with communication. Second thing I look at, what's the sun doing? Because if the sun has solar flares that hit the earth, it actually impacts the magnetic field around the earth. And if we get a large enough EMP, electromagnetic push from the earth, from the sun to the earth, it could kill everything on this earth that is electronic based. And we don't understand that. I also know people who are energy, very energy aware and energy based. One of my very best friends, when she gets angry, we take all technology away from her. Why? Because if she's holding a phone and she gets angry, I have watched the smoke come out of her phone because she's fried the motherboard with her own anger. So when I have glitches like that happen, the first thing I start looking at is the science of it. Is Mercury in retrograde? Are we having solar flares? Where is the magnetic north? Has it been moving? You know, I do all, like we do in ghost hunting, you eliminate the scientific stuff first. Then after that, you go over to, is it supernatural? Is it a ghost trying to get a hold of me? Are they calling the right number or the wrong number? I know a lot of people who had problems with their phones making random phone calls during the large solar flares that we had, I think it was like 6 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And so a lot of that had to do with the electromagnetic pulse that we got from the sun hitting the earth and making the cell towers go a little wiggy.
Yeah.
Now, if it was to happen around Halloween or what we witches refer to as Samhain, then we'd be talking about a lot more ghost activity because the veil between the living and the dead is thinner at that point. And that is usually when you're going to have more kind of electronic haunting activity, so to speak.
Very interesting. Well, I'm glad you explained that and well done on that, because I'll tell you, for a while there, I just thought people were just so baffled by it. But that's wonderful for what you've just described here, because now if it ever happens again, of course, I'll be going through my checklist, because that,
right.
That was a very unusual period of time and lots of struggle there. So tell everybody a little bit about how they can get a hold of you, what type of services you offer, the whole 10 yards on that.
Well, I'm a witch for hire, or a witch of all trades. So, you know, you have the jack of all trades, you have the witch of all trades. And what that is basically I have the ability to do spells for people. I only do it with permission, but I'll do healing spells, fertility jars. I also provide readings. I do tarot, crystal ball as well as pendulum. I don't do pendulum as often because my crystal ball and my tarot work so well for me. Mm-hmm. I also do a healing method that I call amplified Reiki. So I am a Reiki master. But what I do is during my Reiki sessions, I utilize tuning forks. Mm-hmm. And so what the tuning forks help me do in the sound therapy is I can reach more dimensions of your aura and your body for healing. So I do amplified Reiki appointments as well. I teach witchcraft. I also do magical mentoring. So a lot of people who are solitary practitioners who don't want to take a class will come in and say, I really want to work on A, B, C. And we come up with a schedule and a work for them. And then we work one-on-one and they can hone their abilities and their skills with me. Mm-hmm. I also do cord cutting. I do hand fasting. I do end of life services. I am a high priestess. So I do have people coming to me sometimes with, I don't know what to do. So life coaching or life counseling, but it's in a different vein than it would be if you were seeing a social worker, for example. Mm-hmm. Mine is, wow, your energy is really stuck around this part of you. So let's work on that. And so it is very much a self-analysis type of work when you work with someone like me. Mm-hmm. I also work on pets. I do house cleansings, ghost removals. I do Ouija board cleanings. Basically, if it has to do with magic or reaching a goal, I can help you with it I can give you the tools to do the work for it. I can't do the work for you. And that's what witchcraft is all about, is being self accepting and also responsible for yourself. I'll give you the supplies. Here's the arts and crafts. You have to do the craft, which is why my witchcraft class is called Witchcraft 101. Okay. Because we build our book of shadows. We actually make our novice tools for our witchcraft journey so that we can take it and continue it on as long as we'd like. Right. So it's like that.
And when they reach out to you, what are your websites and stuff like that?
So the name of my company is Saren Witchery, which is a play on the word serendipity. So that way everybody knows how to say it. It's Saren Witchery. If you Google my business name, it'll bring you to the website, which is www.sarenwitchery.com. Mm-hmm. I'm also on social media. I have Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. On my website, I try to update the newsletter as often as I can with locations you can find us. Mm-hmm. My apothecary is located inside of the store, If the Broom Fits. I'm located in, that store is located in Beaverton, Oregon. And I rent one of the rooms that is part of the store of If the Broom Fits in Beaverton. Mm-hmm. You can call me, phone 503-999-9390. And if I don't answer the phone, please know I will call you back as soon as I possibly can. But you can get a hold of me through the website, through Facebook, through all the social media outlets. You can get a hold of me, or you can call.
Anya, you did a great job tonight, and thank you so much again.